Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show returns. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss everything going on in the world of college football. We try to keep it pretty much on the field, but man, oh man, what a week eight. We had a ton of competitive games inside the top 25. I think six of them were ranked that loss, and obviously another major upset. Last week it was Georgia. This week it was previously unbeaten Wisconsin falling in a trap game that blew a lot of people away. Illinois got the job done. They have not looked like a team that could beat a team like Wisconsin in general. I mean, I think Wisconsin was giving up 30. I think they gave up 34 points the whole year after six games, and they lose. So unbelievable week eight. Like I said, a variety of competitive almost losses. Example, Texas and Kansas. That was a razor sharp game that came all the way down to the wire. Sure, there were some blowouts. You're going to have some blowouts, especially in the top, you know, say 10, but there was a lot of great games. Oregon came back on the road at Washington, ended up winning 35-31. So there was a variety of upsets. Boise State got beat by BYU. You know, we should start to get a sponsor from BYU all the times we've mentioned BYU on this podcast. But like I said, we're definitely going to break down all the stuff that happened in a crazy and wild week eight. And then we have a fair amount to look forward to say the least, in week nine. You know, of course, we're going to preview and debate, predict all the marquee matchups. We're going to go over the betting line stuff against the spread, upset special, or just games that'll be what we call barn burners, hardcore barn burners that you got to kind of keep, you know, an eye on come third, fourth quarter. But as far as games under the radar, basically, but as far as the marquee matchups, dude, I mean, it doesn't get a whole lot better than this. Week after week here. Number two, LSU versus number nine, Auburn. Number three, Ohio State, who's looking like Wisconsin did, like a juggernaut, right, before they lost against that same Wisconsin. Number 13, now they fell off down to 13. Number eight, Notre Dame versus number 19, Michigan, who barely lost to Penn State, who's now at home, but a home favorite over Notre Dame. So there's some other, you know, games and stuff we'll talk about going into week nine. But man, we have definitely a full show to talk about, jam-packed with a variety of stuff, like I said, to talk about. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. Okay. So it streams live, it archives, it's basically the headquarters, okay? But you can check out the Ropeadope Radio podcast to listen to the College Ball Show on iTunes, a.k.a. Apple Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, really all over the place. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network that can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. You can find us on Spotify as well. In fact, through Siri or Alexa, with Spotify or TuneIn, you can find the show there. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. It's thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu. That's betnow.eu. Promo code TGT, as in the Grueling Truth. So that's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football. It's basketball. It's baseball. It's boxing. It's everything in between. And one more thing before we start breaking down week 8 and all the crazy stuff that happened. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have and you're just not happy, you have so many sports on now in the fall. Football is in full swing. Basketball is picking up. Baseball is going to – the World Series starts tomorrow. A lot of the times you're going to need cable. Why don't you at least give a try to AT&T TV now? It's a 7-day free trial. However, the contracts, there's no contracts. The plans is what I meant to say. The plans start as low as $50. That's HBO included. I'm having problems saying words. Stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR, which is clutch. Like I said, no annual contract. 7-day free trial. You don't even have to just purchase it. You can just give it a try. That's AT&T TV now. I actually don't just sell it to you. I use it as well. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall, my co-host, to kind of check his temperature on a rainy day up north. How's it going in Texas? Probably somewhat nicer than here. But first of all, how you doing? And second of all, week 8 was just all over the place. We had a major upset again. We saw Wisconsin go down. This week, Georgia went down the previous week, and like I said, a plethora of competitive games inside the top 25, man.
Yeah, actually, the weather was scary yesterday. There was a huge tornado that swept through Dallas. It cleaned up quite a bit. Thankfully, it was north of where I live, and then south of where I was at for my girlfriend's for the weekend. It kind of like just shimmied like northeast in between everything, and I drove home at the right time too. But like some of the former Stars players, like nicer houses downtown, they got jacked up. Like it was a pretty bad storm / tornado, but thankfully I didn't know anyone that got hurt. I don't think there was any personal injuries that I heard of, but definitely a lot of houses that are going to need to fork out some cash and insurance and all that stuff to get some houses redone. And obviously, whenever big trees fall and crap, that like that's never good. So that was kind of a bummer on the night. But besides that, it's kind of a weird day yesterday. I won a ton of money, but I had like my car got towed from my girlfriend's parking lot. It is kind of an up and down weekend, but it's a new week. The World Series starts for my Nationals. So I got baseball to go on. My dad's coming down to visit me this weekend. Florida Atlantic.
You gonna get to college football at some point, or what's going on here?
Florida Atlantic lost. That sucks. And Missouri lost. That sucks. Well, I'm happy to be doing the show with you, my friend. I'll start there. For positives, LSU
like
won.
The rest
That's
of
good...
the week. Like the rest of the college football week. Yeah, the positives.
That's a good thing. Oklahoma kept doing what they're doing. And obviously, I know you mentioned it from the start. Oh, man, Wisconsin. Holy God. You know, we have a lot of themes because we've done this show now for 8 or 9 years. I can never remember the exact term. But there's so many times in college football where it's like, hey, you know, due to the scheduling, check out this team. You know, we've talked about a lot this year how Auburn's and A&M schedules are brutal. Due to rivalry games, you know, we got to, you know, ignore a point spread. There's so many little cliches which are true. Another cliche for college football, Chris, is looking ahead on your schedule. And I got to imagine there was a massive look-ahead spot on Wisconsin, which led to the upset. Obviously, this week, Wisconsin plays Ohio State. I'm sure Wisconsin planned on being 7-0 for that big game, but they're now 6-1. Wisconsin was a 30-point favorite in Illinois. That's a massive letdown by the coaches, in my opinion, for the start. You know, as a coach, you know, you always say, Chris, these college kids are hard to predict. You know, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, those are kids growing up and, you know, figuring out life. And sometimes the guidance, you know, as a head coach is very important. Now, obviously, it's not all on the coach, but I got to imagine Wisconsin was kind of thinking, okay, guys, let's go to Illinois. We'll kind of, you know, walk in the door, walk back out, get a W. Now we got a big week out upon ourselves. And just there were so many penalties that Wisconsin normally doesn't make. There was a lot of lazy red zone possessions, or I should call it lazy, but a lot of red zone possessions where they didn't score touchdowns. I mean, this is a team who has arguably the best running back in the country. And they had a possession in the third quarter where they had the ball on the 3-yard line and didn't score. And they settled for a field goal. They, you know, Jonathan Taylor, they tried the other running back a couple times, they didn't get in. So it was probably poorly coached, poorly executed, and then even poorly clock managed. I saw a stat on Twitter about how the last six plays Wisconsin had the ball, they left like 48 seconds on the play clock if you had a ball times for the snap. And Illinois got the ball back with 39 seconds left and kicked a field goal with 4. So a plethora of mistakes, looking ahead, maybe being cocky. And to Illinois' credit, that's a nice fight to come back for a win. Rarely in college football does a freaking 30-point underdog win. Now, I know that Lovie Smith's obviously got the coaching knowledge from being a former NFL guy, and he maybe doesn't have the talent, obviously, but I know a lot of people, Chris, mentioned how they were proud of Illinois for fighting back against Michigan last week. I know they didn't beat Michigan, but I guess they put up a good fight in the second half, and a lot of people thought maybe their second-half fight against Michigan carried them with some confidence to knock off Wisconsin. And, man, what a blow to Wisconsin for having a chance to maybe beat Ohio State and be like the top dog for a while there in the Big Ten. I mean, you suffer this punch. And not that you can't beat Ohio State this week, and I think they'll for sure be focused, but a slip-up that a good team should not have occur on their season.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the classic, you know, just trap game. And it's not, I'm not going to sit here and be like, yep, I saw it coming. You know what I mean? It was 30.5 point. In fact, I think that was the second. Is it the second? It's the second largest upset in the last 40 years for Big Ten as far as point spread. Yeah. So, I mean, that tells you something there. Now, in the loss, you did have, you know, Taylor become the third player to hit 5,000 rushing yards before a season or before his senior season, which is saying something. But they had allowed 29 points this season entering the game. They lost 24-23. I mean, that one really shook me up. And like you said, a lot of this stuff is cliche. A lot of it's this, that, and the third. But we say it because it happens over and over again, especially, you know, with, like you said, 18 to 22-year-olds. You just never know what you're going to get week to week. They start believing the press clippings. And how couldn't you? The way they were destroying him. I mean, Michigan State is not a great program right now. We know that. They're having problems on their offensive line. But they shut him out like 30-something to zero. Like, they came in confidence for good reason to an extent. But, yeah, man, that one was shocking, man. I could not believe it. And it just – it kind of, you know, being that knock on wood that my Gophers are 7-0, start to look at this Maryland game, and you go, you know, if they do a scoop and score like some of these other teams earlier in the season that we gave them points, a scoop and score, a blocked field goal scoop and score, we've had two pick, you know, interceptions, run for touchdowns. You can't let teams like this linger, and it's just a great example. I mean, we saw it last week with Georgia as well. So, and obviously, no one really picked, you know, them to go unbeaten this year. But yeah, man, it talk about the West is just wide open now in the Big Ten. And, you know, obviously the there's still things to figure out on that side. Ohio State just doesn't have that side for sure. They still got to play some teams, obviously, too. In fact, that's kind of what's missing right now off of Ohio State. They look the part, but they need some beef on their plate, you know, to finish up on the resume, to make it look all the way good. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to that. But yeah, man, I mean, people just assume they're going to lose to Ohio State, and all of a sudden they have two losses, you know, and you start to go, okay, dude, here we go. You know, the Gophers don't even at that point would have to just beat Iowa or Wisconsin. They would even have to beat them both. So there is a lot of carnage from that. From the weekend off of that. What were you going to say?
And I'll tell you, Chris, even in conference play, I know we're ripping on the Badgers, rightfully so, but I think if you were to compare this game to the Iowa-Ohio State bloodbath, I mean, even that, no one in the world saw the Iowa massive beatdown of Ohio State a year or two ago. You know, so there's just something about the just rivalries, you know, being in your same division. Like, stuff like this does happen. I know the 30-point spread is massive, but when you have competitive divisions like the Big Ten or the SEC or the ACC, you're going to get those games where you're like, man, looking back on the year, man, that Badger loss, that was mind-blowing. Or, you know, the Iowa over Ohio State, man, who saw that coming? It is hard to get up for all the games, and whether it be a trap game or a game where you have a team that, you know, I think along with being a trap game, I think the better you become, like you said, the egos get a little higher. You know, it is the big man on campus. Like, man, we're incredible. Like, holy shit, we're going to walk through this thing. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, stuff happens. I guess the Big Ten is coming to my mind now that you mentioned that. But, college football is such a grind. And it's hard on fans, too. I guarantee Badger fans, man, they're getting ready. They're tailgating, getting ready for everything. Like, dude, let's start planning the party. And, we lost? What? Are you sure? Yeah, that's all. I had my little Badger in. Yeah, you know, it's just it's craziness. It's pure college football craziness.
Well, and you know, some Badger fans are going to this Ohio State game, and they were just like, I can't wait for that game. I can't it's just going to be awesome. And then you're like, what the hell happened? Let's keep it in the Big Ten. Why don't we? This is the game we thought we'd be talking about in the Big Ten, and the way it started with Penn State jumping up. You know, before you know it, it was 14-0. Before you know it, it's 21-0, and you're like, my God, they are just going to run away with this. Now, they did, Michigan, you know, able to contain it a little bit and calm it down and stay, you know, within the game. It was 21-7 at half. They got it to 21-14, did Michigan. Then I thought it was a big response for Penn State to go right back down and score, get back up by two scores, but then you had them, you know, Michigan go right back and had a nice drive, 9 plays, 75 yards over just a little under, or just a little over 4 minutes to get it within one. And then they forced the 3-and-out as well. And they had a drive going. The score 28-21. They had a 12-play drive lasting almost 5 minutes, get real close to the goal line. And on 4th and goal, that drive seemed like it took forever. But on 4th and goal, you know, say what you want about Shea Patterson as far as underachieving in college in general, the way he came in, but especially at Michigan, because that was the high-profile transfer. He put the ball where the ball needed to be, and the wide receiver dropped the ball. There's just no way around it. It kind of looked like, you know, it was a tight window. But, like, live, it did kind of look like it was knocked away. But once you see the replay, you know, he let it go to his body too much. And as we know, you can't let the ball go to your body. And if you are, you really have to adapt your whole body to get ready for it. It's not like, let's say, a punt return when you're in middle school, you know, and you can, like, you're letting it go to your body. You're catching it with your elbows and stuff, but you're also bracing it with your whole body. You know what I mean? So it's a whole different ball game. Whereas this is like, he just dropped the ball point blank. Now that wouldn't have won the game for him. We don't know what would have happened in regulation. We don't know what would have happened potentially in overtime. But I thought Michigan battled back very well. But they came up short, and Penn State, who over the last 2 years, as we know, they had a hell of a run during that time. They did win a Big Ten championship under, you know, your guy Franklin. But
The guy so much.
But you know, who knew that Clifford would come in, pl- playing a little bit better than Shea Patterson this year. People just kind of thought, oh, Penn State, solid program, very good program. I wouldn't go as far as excellent. They've had excellent moments of late, but here they are, undefeated, and they got a big win. What says you about this game, the way Penn State started that place with the atmosphere in Happy Valley was going crazy? Like I said, the Wolverines came back. They made it a game. I mean, you look at some of these stats, 37-45 to 22-15 was the time of possession. Sure, they did have a turnover, obviously, and the penalties was a little bit more, but the rushing yards, the passing yards, 417 to 283. 7-17 is not even that bad on third down. What happened to Michigan? Was it basic? Did this game just come down to a drop ball and not like starting ready to go? It seemed like they came out lackadaisical or something.
I don't know, brother. It's another big game that Harbaugh's lost. I did hear a stat just to switch the venues a little bit. I think like of Harbaugh's like losses at home in his times in Michigan. Like I believe I heard this stat of his losses at home. Most teams have a combined record of like 30-0, or it was some massive number to point out the fact that the games Harbaugh has lost in Michigan have been against elite opponents. Which, okay, that is all fair and dandy, but it comes a point where you're Michigan. Like when you and I were growing up as like young kids, like that was like a proud school. And I know you got me beat by a couple of years, brother, but I mean, really, 80s, 90s, it's like Michigan football was like a huge deal. And I think there still is that mantra at that college that, hey, we're like one of the elite programs in the country, or should be. And you now have this, you brought in this great coach who still has yet to win a set of big games in the year for you. You know, this loss hurts. Obviously now, you know, you got two losses in conference. You still got Ohio State, who on paper looks better than you. You know, I get that Harbaugh has done a great job of recruiting, but how many more Michigan games are we going to talk about, Chris, where it's like, man, Michigan had a great win today. Like, beating Iowa 10-3, I know it's a ranked, adverse ranked opponent, but that's not a high-class win. So I just don't know how much longer he's going to have on his leash. I suppose if you beat Ohio State this year, that gets you love from the fans, a little bit of a free pass, but just another big game that they lost. And I don't know how the hell they can keep doing it. And maybe the whole Shea Patterson experiment really needs to just end. He is yet to go out and win a game, you know, like they've done in Clemson or Bama, or hell, even sometimes Georgia's quarterbacks put together some good stretches, or Notre Dame lately with like Ian Book. Like, where are we going to get the Michigan good win that they've been waiting for like the past 3 years? It's just hard to imagine. So either the quarterback's got to go, or the coach is like really treading on thin ice now, and that ice is getting smaller and smaller. If Ohio State kicks the crap out of them, it's probably a sea of Harbaugh. I don't see how much longer this can go on, Chris.
Yeah, you're right. The big game thing. I mean, you know, it was nice to battle back, but like I said, you can't come out like basically you can't get down, you know, by that score in a big game, anything like that,
yeah.
Expect to come back, even though they almost did. But you're right. Where was that in the first half, in the first quarter and a half? It just wasn't there. And, you know, Penn State, to their credit, they pieced together a running game enough. If you look at their carries, it's all over the place, you know. But they did enough just to get over 101, yeah, 100 yards, so 101. So they have probably six ball carriers. But, hey, they made it work. They made it work, and they got a huge, huge win. We're going to switch from two Big Ten games, two Big Ten games, to the Pac-12. And obviously the first one we're going to talk about. The other one, yeah, right? The other one was a nice comeback by Oregon on the road, Washington. Actually, Oregon started out 7-0, had a nice drive, long drive, and, you know, thought, all right, well, that's a good way to start it on the road. It was kind of crappy weather out, it's rainy, not a big deal for the Northwest, though. That's where Oregon resides, too. So I don't think that played into, issues too much. But they did get down. In fact, it was 21-14. Then Washington opened it up 28-14. And that was right at the beginning of the third quarter. And Oregon responded with a long-ass drive to get a 28-21. Then there was a field goal, put it up to 10 points again. And they just grinded their way to this win, had two touchdown drives. And that defense we talked about forced two three-and-outs, and then obviously a turnover on downs. When they did have plenty of time to come back and win this game, they were down 35-31, but they had plenty of time, did Washington. They just couldn't quite get it done. This was a really good win for Oregon. What'd you think of this one? And then obviously not a lot to talk about the other game with Utah looking like the team that was picked to win the Pac-12. I still don't know how they lost to Stanford, but they did. But 21-3, they just, a very hot ASU team got cooled off real quick at home, 21-3. And we were talking about that 13-14 point spread that I didn't quite like. Yeah, Vegas has a way of getting it done, 21-3, 18 points. They got it done. What'd you think of those Pac-12 games? It's kind of nice, man. The Pac-12 is very competitive. It's probably about 4 to 6 teams that make for a fun West Coast, especially that late night, West Coast, was it Pac-12 after dark, they're calling it?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Just maybe, Chris. We will have a Pac-12 basketball conference worth talking about this year. Maybe. I hear silence on the other end. That's probably the correct answer. But anyways,
let's just be happy we got a good Pac-12 football. Can we? Jeez. That conference, didn't they break up that conference in basketball? I'm pretty sure.
I think they're getting relegated to Division II due to lack of teams making the tournament. It's going to be D2 now, and maybe then UCLA and Arizona can climb back on top of their once proud conference. For the football game, though, I was a little surprised. Obviously, I'm not a professional immaculate gambler, or else I'd be living in a huge house with nice cars. But I really did think that I'd heard all week that Oregon's defense is really good. And honestly, their numbers of points allowed was even better than Wisconsin, or really close to it. And I saw stats all week saying that basically Eason for Washington was like top. In five quarterback statistics that are important and relevant, Washington's quarterback was like bottom in the conference or like bottom two. So you have one of the best defenses in the country, a lot of people say top five, against a quarterback who is maybe the worst in the conference, who's on a pretty good team. So I thought that also would be a pretty good combination for an easy Oregon win. So to see them get down like they did, that surprised me. Maybe it shows you that Oregon's defense isn't quite as good as people want to believe, kind of like you said with Wisconsin. Sometimes these defensive stats get a little inflated due to playing poor caliber teams. Again, not that Oregon and Wisconsin's defenses are a joke, because any college football team has some guys with speed, but clearly those numbers were bumped up a little bit. And maybe Washington finally had a great game offensively with a quarterback leading the way. I'll give them a credit for a win, but it stood out to me that maybe the defense has a couple of holes in it. For Washington, that's a tough loss. They've had, a couple of games this year where, just like usual, Washington just loses two or three games every year where it's either they blow a lead or they lose someone on the road they shouldn't, or something always happens where they're pretty much guaranteed to be like the 20th team at the end of the year ranked in the nation, with like 9 or 10 wins and 2 or 3 losses. And it's just like, that is their status quo. They hit that probably every year, Chris. I mean, if we were to look back since we've done our show, probably on average, they probably win 9 games a year. but they can't quite hit the elite level of great talent, which will probably be a little frustrating as a fan to have a really good team that just keeps pushing but can't quite get to the top.
Yeah, that would be. Sorry, I thought you had a little bit more on that. My bad.
Oh, you're good. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're right. It's just right in that realm. But, you know, they're pretty legit defense the last chunk of years. I think they had that great recruiting. Not that they don't have good recruiting, or very good recruiting, I should say. They do. But I don't know, man. They had so many skilled players, and then when those skilled players went away to the draft, they have. I'm not saying they don't still have guys that are going to get drafted again, but we saw it with Browning, how his stats went down with the people they were losing, and it doesn't seem like they've brought that back, at least offensively. Now, they scored some points in this game, no doubt about it. They played really well for a while. Didn't play great on third downs, though. That's for sure. But just to go back to Jim Harbaugh real quick, he's now.
Hello? Hello?
Chris? 9-12 against the teams. Uh-oh. You hear me?
You were cutting out there for a second. I can hear you now. We're good.
You know, that's the first time. Wow, that's the first time that Skype, like, fought it. It was like, no, I'm not going to hang up. I'm not hanging up, dang it. I must have hit something. Yeah, it didn't hang up. Okay, weird, because I heard, like, oh, you know what it was? It was somebody was calling in, I think, on my Skype.
Oh, okay.
Like, trying to.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's probably what it was. I was like, what the heck? Usually it just drops. So, yeah, I've lost my train of thought, but that's okay. No big deal. The other game, just kind of cleaning up some of that, is Utah and Arizona State. And, I mean, they just demolished them, man. 20-8 on first down, 7-14 was Washington on third down compared to 2-13. Just beat them up, ran the ball a bunch. A lot of penalties. It would have been more of a blowout, but the only thing Utah didn't do right, well, both of them, like I said, a lot of penalties, especially Arizona State. I think they got 12 penalties. But
oh, wow.
They turned the ball over a bunch, I think three or four times. I think it was four times. So just imagine what the score could have been had they not done that. I don't know if I'd go Oregon. I'm kind of all over the place because of that little almost dropped. I'm not sure what the hell happened there.
Sure.
But and I lost my train of thought there. But just to go back to Oregon, I wouldn't call them a top five defense, but it's definitely a top 20. Top five is just so tough to be in anyway because there's 120 odd teams. But
the numbers were there up until Saturday morning. I didn't quite believe it, but the numbers were, like, out there on computers. Again, obviously, that's why we watch games, but I'm with you. I was surprised with how big the numbers were, but as of now, that comes down a little bit into reality.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, they played really good. I think that beyond all – I guess my thing is with stats, I just wouldn't – they don't look like a top five defense to me.
Sure.
Because when you look at it, I mean, Stanford did beat Utah somehow, some way. You know, Cal's a good team, but we know they haven't been as good without their quarterback. Colorado's a fun team to watch. They're competitive. Washington's a pretty good club. I guess my point is, you know, they haven't played a bunch of offensive gifted, you know, teams. So your stats can look better than they are. But either way, much to improve. Much to improve. But back to, you know, Utah just handling business. And I could see them just kind of gritting their teeth, still pissed off that they lost somehow to Stanford, and just winning out. I mean, they have the team to do it. you know, the quarterback is throwing here and there a little bit more, but it is they try to run the you-know-what out of the ball, but they do really well with the play action. If you look at – he's like a game manager in the passing game, Huntley is, but
– sure.
He also makes some plays, a couple of plays a game that they need through the air, and we already know what he can do on, you know, on the ground. That's why I think he's actually turning into a somewhat legitimate dual threat. Not a guy that's going to put up 300 yards and 100 yards rushing. That's not what I'm saying. But he's starting to live up to the dual threat that they really need to be that upper echelon team. And they really took care of business, though, Utah did over Arizona State. Another surprise on the West Coast was BYU beating Boise State. They were without their top QB. Boise State was, but BYU lost their starting QB. They're on their third QB, actually, anyway, so it really shouldn't matter that much. 28-25, though, that was a bit of a surprise. Texas somehow, some way, survived a game with Kansas, 50-48. That thing, I kept looking at the score like, what the hell's going on over there? And I actually have, just to clean up, Justin Herbert, the quarterback for Oregon, he's now thrown a touchdown pass in 35 consecutive games. That's the longest active streak in the FBS. You think, just one, but that just shows you it is the longest streak, so it means something. But what was I going to – oh, there was a stat that stood out, and I can't find it now. But that freaking – I mean, Les Miles – I don't know, man. I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid. They can. How come he has an offense at Kansas but couldn't find one at LSU? I guess that would be a problem the last 5-6 years or whatever. But Texas's defense really needs to shape up here. And did you see that guy that, you know, the head coach that you don't like too much? He was really starting to – well, we got to fix some stuff on that side of the ball. Next question. He was really getting grumpy and short, you know, answered when it came to his defense, not his offense. But Texas got an offense, we know that. But that game would have been an ugly, ugly loss there.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about how Wisconsin had a trap game. Another – cliche in college football sometimes is the fact you play a huge rivalry game and you lose, and now you just, it's kind of just a shit week of practice. I mean, you know, Oklahoma, Texas last 2 weeks ago, that was like a competitive game. That was close. Oklahoma won by a touchdown. Like, that's, you know, that's got to be a pretty gut wrenching loss to Texas, whose defense played the best they've probably played all year. And, you know, you can get cocky for games, and sometimes you can just say, well, shit, this week sucks. And I would imagine there's probably a little bit of the hangover effect of the Oklahoma game, you know, your biggest rivalry game of the year, and now you're playing a Kansas team that's like, well, screw them. They've never beat us. Who gives a crap? You know, and then they had to kick a game-winning field goal. Kansas was up 48-47. And, man, I would love to have broken down a Kansas win over Texas. I know I never want to talk about Kansas in basketball, but in football, why not? And man, to see the fourth quarter was 24-26. I guess the boys came to play there late. Yeah, Les Miles there, man. He's making progress. You know, is he going to get it out there for 3 to 4 years to truly change around? I guess we'll see. But definitely making Kansas a relevant team. They've shown minor signs of relevancy the past couple of years, a little bit here and there, but they're making more strides, and I'm sure that man is going to help their recruiting out massively, even if they go from a D-plus recruiting school to an average C, you know, whatever the case is. They need a bump up, and I'm sure that man's going to give it somehow. A Big 12 game that surprised me that many people picked the wrong team in the Vegas way. The Vegas was always right, or neither are the gambling experts. A lot of people thought Oklahoma State was going to beat Baylor. Baylor had a lot of wins, but not many were necessarily impressive on the scoreboard. They had a lucky game against Texas Tech last week where a fumbled snap really helped them in overtime, a little bit of good luck. Oklahoma State was coming off a bye. You know, they're looking like they're going to be good to go. Gundy at home, all this blah, blah, blah. Baylor might have played their best game of the year. They beat Oklahoma State 45-27. That's another nice win. They now move to 7-0. Wow. Charlie Brewer for Baylor, 13 of 17, so they didn't throw much, 312 yards. Oklahoma State may want to touch up to their secondary. When your quarterback is averaging 30 yards a pass completion, you may want to correct something. I'm not sure what it is, Chris, but dear God, that is a very nice fantasy stat layout. For throwing 13 passes, you go for 300, man, that's a fancy day. But credit to Baylor, you know, Matt Rhule, that guy's a hell of a coach. We've talked about him a couple of times. Could have been the Jets head coach this year if they'd let him bring his own staff. That dude continues to impress people. And I know Oklahoma's the top dog in the conference, and Iowa State gets a lot of love and all this stuff, but Baylor hasn't lost yet. I said their time will come with Oklahoma, but that's a dangerous-looking team. They're a tough, gritty, hard-nosed. We want to run the ball, play really hard defense. And their quarterback can throw. But, man, they're I don't think many people would have had them being 7-0 considering the first year Matt Rhule was there. I believe they were 1-11. What a hell of a good third year for Rhule and Baylor for a team that used to be a massive offensive the former coach that got into trouble. But now, man, that credit to them. They're, I would say, easily the second-best team in the Big 12 as we speak.
You know, obviously, it was fun to see them get beat as a program for a while, but that time is past now, and those players didn't do stuff. And, you know what I mean? Like, coach is gone, and we know a lot of stuff happened on that program that was really, really ugly. So, you know, we're not going to sit here and say we didn't enjoy watching them get beat for a little bit, but now that stuff's over, and you're right, man. I definitely wouldn't have thought, oh yeah, man, they'll be undefeated. And some of these games, they've done it somewhat impressively too, very tight games. And you're right, I did see a lot of people picking Oklahoma State in that. And you know, I definitely eyeballed it. I didn't think that they were going to do what they did there. I mean, 45-27, that's really impressive. Speaking about undefeated, SMU took care of it. They handled, I thought this could be a tighter
good
game
for
too.
Them.
They handled Temple. Yeah, 45-21. Real easy win there. Cincinnati rolls. Vanderbilt, unfortunately, beat Mizzou, who was just got ranked 22nd. Iowa held off Purdue. Appalachian State is doing what they're doing all year, and that's really just beating people up. And Minnesota handled Rutgers 42-7. There is some stats here that just make you laugh but also make you smile. And some people may just cry if you're like 60 years old. Of course, you probably saw a lot of success with the Gopher program too already, so they're just happy it's coming back. But when you start to look at this stuff, dude, it's pretty crazy. So they've scored 28 points in all seven games. That's the first time that's happened in 100 years. Okay? 28 points in all seven games. Yeah. Then in the last 13, they're 11-2. Okay? That hasn't happened since that same 48-49 season where they won 8 in a row. 9-game winning streak. You got to go back even further. 1942, the first time since 1967, okay, that they started out 4-0 in the Big Ten. To have 5 straight Big Ten victories, you got to go back to 1970. Starting out 7-0, 1960, and you know it's been about almost a decade or so, somewhere in that realm, that they, you know, added to the Big Ten even more, and they have, you know, divisions now instead of just one Big Ten. It's the first time they had sole possession of the Big Ten West. It's just fun. You know, it's just a fun time. We now have a trap game. Does Minnesota with Maryland. They have it at home, but it is a trap game because there's a bye, and then Penn State's coming to town. And the last four games after the Maryland game, knock on wood, okay, after the Maryland game, it goes at home Penn State, on the road Iowa, which we know is a tough place to play, on the road Northwestern, which they're not the squad they are, but then again, Illinois wasn't the squad they have been ever. And then at home, Wisconsin. So you got Penn State, Iowa, and Wisconsin, throwing to Northwestern and Maryland, and that's what the schedule's looking like here. So obviously our toughest, you know, you got to keep it all in realm. I'm spitting out all this, you know, all these stats because I'm a happy Gopher fan. But I realize that we've only played a very mediocre schedule. And some of those teams like Georgia Southern and Fresno are not as good as they had been the previous year because they're retooling, I should say, off of great years. Fresno had a great year last year for them, and they lost a lot of talent. So I keep it all in perspective. I just really, really want to beat Maryland. And like I said, if there's any pick sixes or scoop and scores, this stuff could go south real quick. So to go in, if, like I said, knock on wood, if they can come in 8-0 and Penn State, I think they got to play Michigan State, which isn't a gimme, although it feels like it this year. You could come in there with some highly ranked teams matched up, in Minnesota being one of those highly ranked teams. I think it's November 9th at home. That would be the TCU game a chunk of years ago was a big game at home. But that would be the biggest game at home in a long, long time. And we're not there yet, but yeah, I'm just happy with the PJ Fleck experience. You know what I mean? And I got my row, or I got my row in the boat. I do. I got my row in the boat. I bring my row to the boat. No, and I got my oar in the Mississippi River. I live right by it, so I'm all for PJ Fleck and what he's been doing, man. Like I said, I'm just enjoying it. I'm not worrying about who we've played and who we have to play, you know?
Hey, as a sports fan, the man that loves sports like we do, you just simply have to. Moments like for the Nationals, this baseball thing, who knows if team ever goes to the World Series again? Who knows if, we'll ever see the Vikings in the Super Bowl again? Like, you got to enjoy sport moments like this because you can never predict what happens from year to year. So you should absolutely enjoy the fact that the Gophers are having a badass year. I think I heard, is the 7-0 start, is that the first 7-0 start since like 63? I could be wrong, but I believe I heard something relatively close to that. So I mean, it's the first time in over 60 plus years your team starts 7-0. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter who you're playing. That's tremendous. Meanwhile,
yeah,
I've got Clay Helton as head coach who I want fired, and Barry Odom from Mizzou, who the guy doesn't win big games. Is he a good coach? Sure. Mizzou's going to win 7-8 games a year with him. Do we always beat up the bad teams in the SEC and look good for a 3-game stretch? Sure. But that's because we don't get Alabama and Auburn every year. Like, we never beat Georgia. So I'd be ready for him to go. Maybe him and Clay Helton can swap jobs. Maybe that makes something better. I don't know. Maybe Lane Kiffin needs to come to Mizzou. Put Lane Kiffin in Mizzou. Then we'll see some high-flying offenses. Anyways.
Yeah, he does have a good track record as a head coach in a legitimate conference, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He almost beat Bama the first 1 year he was at Tennessee. It was a very close competitive game, if not for a missed field goal. You know, one of the best upsets ever. But one rant I have, I always enjoy a couple of rants, and I by no means am I a South Carolina Gamecocks fan. I've always kind of liked them, I guess, a little bit. I think the stadium's pretty cool. They always seem to have a good vibe there. They've always had a pretty good team. Man, Will Muschamp, you know, they had the massive upset win last week, which was phenomenal, beat Georgia. And now you got playing Florida, who's obviously another tough opponent. But, man, did the refs do them no favors. Georgia won the game. Excuse me, I'm getting my SEC schools messed up. Florida did win the game, okay? But it was due to some very lucky plays. Florida won 38-27. But early in the game, Florida had a play where it was first and 10 on like their own 30. Their right guard, right tackle has a massive false start penalty like that everyone should have saw. But then the running back, of course, breaks it down the field for a 70-yard touchdown. But for the last 30 yards of the touchdown, you clearly see on camera that there is a wide receiver holding a DB by his jersey, like on near his shoulder pad, holding him for like the last 30 yards and won't let him make the tackle. So you missed a massive holding and a false start that leads to a touchdown. Okay, that's one time. That's kind of bad luck. The second touchdown Georgia scores was kind of clinched the game when when Florida was up four. There's, I believe 6 or 7 minutes left in the game. Florida's up four. They're trying to score to put, the game on ice. Florida has two wide receivers to the right, and they have a wide receiver literally run down and block a DB. Like, feet were in the ground. He was like, it was a blocking drill like you're doing in high school, trying to pump your feet. He does that. No refs see it. They throw the guy to the wide open wide receiver after he ran the pick play. Another touchdown. So Florida has two touchdowns missed on wide open officiating calls. That's a tough one if you're a fan. Man, you get the upset win last week. Your team's playing really good. And the officials essentially give Florida two touchdowns. No, I'm not saying that Florida wouldn't have won the game. But, man, you have two blowing calls that were massive, and that leads to 14 points. You lose by 11. Ooh, I'd be pretty pissed off, Chris. I just Muschamp had to get, pulled back by his coaches because his rant to the ref, that ref sat there for about a couple minutes and took it and then walked away. But, man, Muschamp was heated. But if you'd seen the replay, I mean, it wasn't even a pick play. The Patriots kind of learned how to do that. And nowadays in football, if the receiver runs toward a guy and turns around to fake catching the ball or something, this dude was trying to push him back 30 yards. And I mean, it's wide open and they don't call it. And at least say, ooh, just a little bit of bad karma. And then of course the fans throw stuff on the field, a whole lot of bad stuff. But man, I hope those refs get, reprimanded or something. When refs have bad games like anyone else, you deserve some type of punishment, maybe miss a game or something, but you can't be missing those big calls in any college football level, especially, the SEC, which is the prominent division in college football, man. But a pretty bad beat there for South Carolina.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Florida ended up winning 38-27, 21 straight fourth quarter points, most points in the fourth versus SEC team. We both can't talk since 2008. So, that game was really competitive, and then it got out of hand. And some of those reasons they got out of hand, you go, wow, that sucks. That does suck for South Carolina. That sucks. That Trask dude keeps putting up numbers, man. For Florida, first Gator with three. Here, I'm trying to give the guy some credit. And okay, there it is. First Gator with three touchdown passes in consecutive SEC games since 2001. Did you think they run a lot with Tebow? Oh my goodness gracious! And that makes sense though when you start to add it up. Because you're a lot of those times he ran so much that a lot of his touchdowns are runs. So you're I suppose. How many three-touchdown games did he even have? Through the air, anyway. Craziest freaking game, though, was that North Carolina, Virginia Tech. Six overtime, I think it was, right? That was nuts. And when you... I didn't see it live. I just kept kind of checking in randomly, but
six.
The 2-point tries, they both were one of four going for two-point tries, right? Both teams missed a field goal in the first overtime. A TD in the second overtime, missed a field goal in the third and fourth. It had so many different random things in that game happen. That was the longest ACC game ever, too, the six overtime game. I just remember
That's
that.
Awesome.
I think it was five was the other
one. Yeah, they've made a rule now to where once you make a fifth overtime, it's just automatically two-point conversions. You know, I don't necessarily like that. I remember watching last year that LSU-Texas A&M game and, like, holy God, you know. There is kind of an enjoyment, as long as you're not a fan that loses, of watching your, you know, of watching a game that is six or seven overtimes or watching your team win that type of game. But, yeah, that was definitely a crazy game. And, you know, the ACC, you mentioned the Pac-12 has been pretty fun. I think the ACC has been a little more enjoyable than we've expected. Now, obviously, Clemson's a top dog, you know, but Carolina's kind of been a fun story. Pitt is doing their Pitt things. You know, I think it's been a little more maybe a little more fun to talk about of late. You know, I'm sure Clemson's going to be a 20-point favorite to win the ACC championship again. But like usual, and actually, Chris, to give you credit, you said this about 7 or 8 years ago. No matter what the preseason odds say, it is the most unpredictable division in college football. Any team can win it, or any team can ruin another team's dream season to win that, because that ACC is always just a crazy barrage of games that no one really expects to happen a lot in that conference, especially in this month coming up, you know, in October, November. It's just craziness. I lean away from betting the ACC because this next five or six weeks, it's very hard to predict.
Yeah, that Coastal, man, is crazy. And so let's go over that new ruling, because I forgot about this in the off season. So if teams that played four overtime periods are still tied, they move to one play possessions, 2-point conversions. So those attempts will start from the 3-yard line, unless a penalty is enforced. So it's not the 25 once you get to the fifth is what it is, right? It's just straight up,
yeah.
Let's go for it, just go. So it's just talk about even. I mean, that adds, Drew. Like I remember thinking about it, going, you know, I'm not 100% sold on it, but it does talk about, like. I mean, once you're in the fourth overtime and you haven't settled it by then, you know, okay, that kind of does make sense to an extent, because then it's like dramatic play after dramatic play after dramatic play. You don't even have to warm up with a couple of plays to see if they scored. So I'm not really all that against it, to be honest with you, because you've already done four. I mean, that's a lot of four overtimes doing the old rule. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying, though, too. I do hear what you're saying. And it will affect the scoring books, that's for sure. Because some of those games, what was that? What was that game you were just talking about, 77-74? Was that the total? Something like that. That's freaking crazy, dude. I wanted to mention this real quick before we, you know, get into some of these predictions, which we got to do here soon. SMU player Reggie Robertson, he's a wide receiver. He caught 8 balls for 250, right? 3 touchdowns. This guy has been on a tear of late, and it is crazy how this happens every single week right around an hour left. an hour into the show. Unless he purposely dropped, that would be crazy. Okay, he's back. I really am wondering if that was like a on purpose one or not, but I did mention when I got all sidetracked, this is something I was going to mention too. There were, if you look at Oregon State, Boston College, Illinois, Vanderbilt, and Georgia Tech, they all went, and they were definitely heavy underdogs, and they basically, all of them were supposed to lose pretty heavily. And actually, speaking of refs and the replay and all that, now, Miami, this season's, you know, it is what it is, right? We've lost a lot of tight games, yada, yada, yada. No excuses. But the Georgia Tech game, first of all, they shouldn't be down to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is putting in a spread offense, okay? And if you paid attention to Georgia Tech at all in the last 15 years, they're, you know, they ran the option the best, the triple option. And so when you go from triple option to spread, you're not going to be good. You know what I mean? You're just not going to be good. It's going to take time. You have so many players recruited to the option that don't have a clue how to do it on a D1 level, the spread. But So they shouldn't have been losing as well, or winning, barely losing, whatever the case may be. They shouldn't have been there, the Hurricanes. But when they give them the first down, right? So they give them a first down in overtime. And then they go on the replay. They check the replay. And they say, okay, the call stays, you know, as is of what it was called on the field, which it was called a first down. Then they proceed the refs to move the ball and take a measurement. It's like, hold on now. You just told us that the first down call stays off the replay, but we're moving the ball. Now we're going to measure. Like, couldn't you have just said on the replay, we now have a different spot. So we're going to spot it there and measure it. You don't say it stands, the replay stands, because the replay, the whole point of the replay was to see if it was a first down. And it was a first down. It's just like, wow, really? That makes no sense to me. But like I said, I'm not going to sit here and make an excuse for it, though, either. But I'm going to bring in my co-host. So, Marshall, did you hang up purposely, or just because of that jinx that we've had, or did it hang you up? Did you hang up again?
No, because it seems like for some reason, whenever we hit an hour, my phone's been dropping.
Right.
So I just decided to quickly call back and get in, so I'm good for the rest of the show, because I don't want to get dropped past the hour, then I'm out of luck. So, yeah, we're good to go.
Right. Right. Okay. Just so you got, just making sure that you know that. And just knowing the time frame, we just got to make sure we're on the same page, because sometimes I can schedule a little earlier and we end up, you know, it could have been over the time, but I'm glad that you did that. That was key. Anything else, though, we've really got to get to these three big, big matchups and some other betting line stuff, but anything else that you want to wrap up from week eight?
I think the Oregon State Beavers hit their over on the season win total. They beat Cal. Cal's offense has been struggling. Props to Oregon State, man. They're 3-4 of the year, 2-2 of the Pac-12. They have been like the, you know, stepchild of the Pac-12 for a long time. And that team is 2-2 in conference. I don't care who they've beat. And they lost to Stanford by 3 points in a crazy game. I think they're finally making progress. I kind of like to see the bottom end teams win the game. And poor Cal, man, their year was starting off so good. They're ranked. They beat Ole Miss. And now your quarterback gets hurt. And now you're all of a sudden your star defense is really having to do more than they probably can. And props to Oregon State. And that's all I got about that.
That's all you got to say about that. Okay, let's get into it. We got a variety of great matchups. Number 2 LSU versus number 9 Auburn. And just looking at the stats real quick, like, it just blows me away to see LSU averaging 50 points a game. Like, it's just, I realize they've been putting up points. I realize they've been, you know, but it's still just captured that they're averaging basically 540 points, or 40, that'd be a lot, 540 yards a game, for Christ's sake. They're averaging 385 through the air, Marshall. 300 for an LSU offense, an LSU quarterback, they're averaging 385. They only run the ball 154 per game, which usually they're well over 200, but why run when you can pass? They are doing a good job at stopping the run defensively, or a pretty good job. Not so much in the pass game. It is kind of crazy that now you go, man, is defense going to be the thing that holds back LSU this year? That would be crazy too. And, you know, speaking of running the game, Nix is still developing, but speaking of run game, almost 240 yards a game that Auburn creates on the ground. And that obviously can be key. It definitely could be key down the stretch, you know, if they cannot turn the ball over, that type of thing. I mean, Vegas basically says, hey, dude, you know, LSU's going to win. 11.5-point favorite. I don't have the over-under right now, but even the over-under is probably much higher than it has been in the last couple stadiums. I look at that Tiger Stadium. Last couple of years, Man, we are on crack or drunk or all three. I don't know what we're doing, but we can't talk today at all. But Tiger Stadium,
I know.
It's just like, does LSU really need to just screw up to lose this game? And it even hearing myself say that kind of makes me cringe, because you're like, okay, Auburn's not that bad though, and it's still a matchup of two top 10 teams. What says you about this matchup? And is LSU just offensively steamrolling people to where at some point they're going to wear down Auburn and win this game?
Man, I don't know. I mean, it's not at night. That's an advantage for Auburn. It's a 2:30 start. Man, if I was LSU, I would say screw CBS. I want all my night games for the big games, because that it's such a different environment. Not that they don't have a good home crowd during the day, but I'd be a little concerned if I'm LSU, just simply because of the fact that, like, in that Florida game, Chris, if you were watching that game when I was out at D-Dubs, there was a couple of LSU fans there, and they were just in awe. They're like, well, we can't get a damn stop, you know? And Florida's offense, I wouldn't say is, like, high class. I mean, now, Trask hasn't been bad, but they're not world beaters. And, you know, Texas moving down the whole field on them. I think LSU, maybe they got the second half kickoff. They had a little bit of a stretch there, but even Texas was scoring at will. It was a 14-point lead down to a 7-point lead the whole game. So I guess my point to you is LSU's offense going to continuously win them track meet games? You know, if you're a gambler or just person on, you'd eventually say no. Now, I know that Burrow, actually I saw today, is the Heisman favorite. He was open up at 200-1 this year to win it. Now he's the favorite with almost even money. But I just wonder if LSU can continuously have their defense really not come out to play in big games and just heavily rely on the offense. I don't know if that's a winning major for success, you know, because Auburn's got a better D. You know, I know they're on the road, but Auburn's got better defense. LSU's got better offense. But I just wonder how many more times Joe Burrow can save the day. And I know this is super weird saying that for LSU. But, man, that defense, I guess they played a little better in the second half against Florida, but that first half of that game, that was a pick-em. That was dead even. And I just think eventually, I think this defense might let them down this week. I hate saying that because I enjoy LSU. I love Coach O, and he doesn't lose to top 10 teams besides Bama. But, man, I hope Joe Burrow scores probably about 45 points again, because I got a feeling they're going to need it, Chris.
You found a way not to do the pick, though, huh? That was slick. That was slick, dude. That was pretty slick. So who's your pick? Are they getting beat or not?
I think the offense has a minor off week. I do think Auburn wins. Yeah, I think they slip up for once and Auburn wins. I hope I'm wrong, but I'll take Auburn with the points and in the upset.
So you got 11.5, and obviously against the spread – You definitely think that Auburn could sneak under, and I'm looking at that thinking that they can sneak under that as well, just off a lot of what you said. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think the Florida game really puts that in perspective to an extent. You know, they're not a great offense, but they are starting to move the ball. We just got done telling them, you know, back-to-back weeks with the 3 touchdowns. That hadn't been done before Tebow even was on campus. So I just don't think this is going to be the week. And, you know, when we say, oh, they're going up and down, up and down. Well, Texas goes up and down on a lot of teams, you know what I mean? And have the last couple of years. So, man, but that Florida game, you're right. LSU just made a couple more big plays.
Sure.
In that game defensively, but
well,
yeah,
I think the one difference.
I do have
to wrap this baby up. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I didn't know that. God, Bama's next week. Jesus Christ, what a tough stretch for LSU. Holy cow.
It's not next week.
Oh, it's their next game. Sorry. So they have a bye after this. Okay. I think this is the. Just like we were saying, Oregon and Wisconsin's defensive numbers are maybe inflated. I think LSU's, this is the best defense they're going to face all year. So if Burrow hangs 40-plus on Auburn, I think that's even more credit to LSU. You know, a lot of these defenses, like Oregon's defense, you said, wasn't quite as good as they looked on numbers. Can LSU hang 40-plus on Auburn's defense, who's hands down the best defense they've faced all year? So that'll be another test. Again, Coach O doesn't lose top 10 games, so I don't want to, you know, speak out against that man, but I think this is the one minor slip-up week.
I'm actually trying to find the number right now. It is, what is, a 51. 51 is the over-under. What do you say about that one right there?
That's Vegas, Sam, dude. Yeah, that's Vegas, Sam. LSU offense is going to be under control. The shit, they've been averaging, like you said, 52 a game.
Cool. All right, well, this is going to be a good matchup, man. This is definitely going to be a good matchup. But let's combo the next two matchups because they do have a Big Ten feel, being even, you know, it's Notre Dame, but big, you know, they have a Midwestern feel, obviously. Ohio State, number 3 ranked versus 13, Wisconsin, coming off that loss. They're obviously going to be, will they be wounded? Will they be kicking rocks? Or will they be motivated? And then number 8 Notre Dame versus number 19 Michigan. And right now, Michigan, Vegas has Michigan as a 1.5-point favorite. What says you about those two games?
Man, I would assume we're going to see the best Wisconsin team, you know, that we've seen all year. I think that loss refocuses you in practice, pisses off the coaching staff, which obviously should motivate the players. Speaking of things teams haven't seen before, Ohio State has not seen a running back like Jonathan Taylor. Okay, this guy is probably the best running back in the country, if not for Joe Burrow and Tua, and you know he could be possibly a definite Heisman candidate. I think the Badgers are going to run the ball, but are they going to be able to slow down Ohio State's offense, who in the second quarter of this year, I don't have the numbers, but I feel like they averaged 28 points a game in the second quarter. So they found a way to just maybe make some quick adjustments and just kill people in the first half. And when you're Ohio State, you get up, you know, 20-plus at half, it's a wrap. You know, you can bring in the backups, you can maybe run the ball a little bit, work the clock, do something. Ohio State has just been in complete control of every second half game pretty much the whole year. So I think that Ohio State's going to score. I think that Ohio State's offense is going to be slowed down. I think Wisconsin's going to have to really run the ball, try to win the time of possession battle. If this game was in Madison, I would lean the Badgers have a chance, but it's not. Ohio State's minus 14. I think Vegas is on here. I just think, Chris, that I think Ohio State is too much of a complete team for what we've seen so far, and I don't think Wisconsin's quite good enough. And this will be the toughest matchup that Wisconsin's quarterback has played, and that Jack Cohn. He's had a good start to the year, a marvelous start, but this is his first, like, big game. And maybe I'm loving Ohio State too much. It's just they've looked so good and impressed me so much. I can't go against that now. I think Ohio State wins the minus 14. That's looking a little strong, but we said the same thing about Utah and ASU. So I wouldn't bet on the game, but I would definitely take an Ohio State victory. I think it's a little too much for Wisconsin at this time.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just that 14 points. I think I'm right there with you on that as far as staying away from it. Because you know those late fourth quarter drives, or
yeah,
you know if Ohio State were to get up, that totally changes the whole game plan that Wisconsin wants to do. And next thing you know, you got a quarterback that's doing something that, sure, he's better than the last quarterback at doing, but it's not necessarily his comfort zone. I'm going with Ohio State pretty cleanly, although I'll say it's going to be about a 2.5 quarters of a really tight game max, and then I think they'll start to put the throttle down. At first I thought, man, bouncing back, Wisconsin's a prideful program, maybe they can sneak under that. I'm still kind of wishy-washy as far as Michigan and Notre Dame. Now Notre Dame beat Virginia, just recently beat USC in a tight game. they had a really close game with Georgia, and that was, you know, basically a month ago already. It is crazy that we're already at week 9. As much as it feels like there's a lot of football to be played, the college football regular season is also a sprint. It feels like a marathon in some place, you know, in some moments, because you have so many matchups to talk about week after week after week. And as we know, we've claimed this for years, and it's just a fact that the regular season in college football, hands down, can't be touched as far as drama and just all the different things that happen. But I'm looking at this game, and I'm like, Notre Dame should beat them, but it's on the road. Everybody plays better at home. Vegas is telling us basically Notre Dame should, you know, because of the 3-point spread, or, you know, that you get at home, it's only a 1.5-point. I'm just kind of all over the place on this. And my thing is, does Notre Dame have a good enough defense? And I think they do. I mean, they played pretty damn good against Georgia. And Georgia could put some points up. We obviously know that they love to run the ball, and a lot of it's, you know, off of that. But maybe Georgia isn't as, you know, great as we thought they were. I mean, they obviously, you know, took a loss too. But when you look at that game, you know, they had 152 yards rushing, but they kept Swift to 98 yards rushing, and that's really containing them. You know what I mean? So, man, do I go against Michigan back-to-back weeks? You know, I'm 1-1 with – well, I'm 2-1 now, I guess, with them. But, you know, prior to last week, I was 1-1 with them. And I didn't want to pick them again for the third time in a big matchup. It just felt like, dude, the odds are against it. Just don't do it. And obviously, if it wasn't for that drop catch, who knows what would have happened after that. But – obviously, I got lucky, but, man, do I go back now to Michigan at home? And, man, I'm stuck on this one, dude. I'm really stuck on this. As you can tell, I'm literally just burning time so I don't have to pick. I just sold Notre Dame in this game, but you know what? I'm going Notre Dame. I'm going Notre Dame. God, why am I doing that? I'm going Notre Dame to win this game. What says you about this one?
I mean, okay, Notre Dame lost to Georgia. They beat Virginia, which is like a respectable, like that's probably like a letter grade B win. And they beat USC. Man, USC's offense was just moving. After the first quarter, like they weren't getting stopped. So the only thing – but – with all that being said, for Notre Dame, whether or not they've played good or bad teams this year, I can't pick Michigan in a big game. I can't do it. Okay, they beat Iowa 10-3. That's maybe one of the last few times in the past 3 years they've beat a ranked team at home. So I got to go Notre Dame just simply due to the fact that Shea Patterson and Harbaugh haven't won these. I'll go based off that. That's until Michigan wins a big game, and I guess he's considered this a big game. I can't pick them. So I'll go Notre Dame. The point spread odds obviously show it's going to be close. I'm sure Michigan's defense will play all out like they normally do, but I just don't think the offense will do enough. So I'll take Notre Dame. And God, I hate saying that. I almost never pick the Irish, but yeah,
too.
Notre Dame to win.
I'm right there with you. And we're just going to kind of piece together some of these items here. Penn State on the road at Michigan State, only a 6-point favorite. When Wisconsin just blew them out like 38-0, that's one that I think that Penn State will beat Michigan State. Michigan State offensively, their offensive line is just not all that good, man. They're having some serious problems there. Another game I was kind of eyeballing, where did it go? I lost it now. I wonder if Washington State can put up some offense to make it at least a respectable, fun Pac-12 after dark, like everybody's, you know, saying this year, Washington visiting Oregon. I don't expect them to win at all, but I don't know. You look at that and you go, maybe they can make that a little bit more interesting, especially coming off such a big win. You know, we talk about trap games. Well, sometimes a trap game can be coming off a big win as well. You can't forget about that. Colorado USC should be like one of those hardcore barn burners. Well, it'll just be good. My take it to the window, easy money pick, is Pittsburgh, a 4.5 favorite at home over Miami. I'm just going with it. That's right. I said it. I'm doing it. It feels good because you either get it right or your squad wins. So I feel like over the time, it feels good to say that because, you know, it's a win-win, really. Minnesota, 16-point favorite over Maryland. I really think that's going to be – I think that's an against-the-spread thing. I'm not saying, oh, Minnesota's going to lose for sure, trap game and all that, but I just – at some point, I know they say the four walls, and we're just worried about the what's inside these four walls and the outside world, but – you can't – there's just no way. There's too many stats out there from 1962 when it comes to the Gopher program that they have to be reading a little press clippings. And Maryland, like I said, has talent. They just haven't put it together. I think Louisville will beat Virginia at home. They're a 3.5-point favorite. That is one of my upsets of the week. Just kind of looking through some other games, hardcore barn burners, Duke and North Carolina. You know that'll be probably a good game. South Carolina and Tennessee. Tennessee sucks, but they did get some wins together. Now that Texas Tech KU game looks like fun as far as a hardcore barn burner type. But Temple just got beat but had some solid wins and played pretty good. They're a 10.5-point underdog at home at Central Florida. And I'm not saying Central Florida is going to lose the game, but they've just lost back-to-back. So I don't know if I just give them 10.5. I guess that's my point there. Any more games you want to get to, you know, check out as we get to this crafty pick of the week?
I think you nailed them pretty well, my friend. Yeah, nothing's really jumping out to me for the point spreads. Obviously, the bad part is for gambling. The longer the year goes, the smarter Vegas gets. Now, I normally kind of fall apart the first couple weeks, too. My last couple of weekends have been good. Last night, a monsoon in D.C. came through to help me in the NFL. I saw it was pouring rain and bet the under and had a really nice payday yesterday for NFL, luckily. But, yeah, the Lions, I'm with you, though, Chris. I would lean that the Gophers, I think they win. I've watched Maryland now a couple of times. I actually – picked Indiana this past week, and they won a team total. So I don't think that the Maryland run defense can stop the Gophers' running game, but 16 points is a lot. Maryland does have a couple of speedy players that can break loose for a couple of big plays. I guess with my gambling pick, I'll take Auburn plus 11.5. I think that's a confident pick with Auburn's defense. The over-under Vegas is set. And the fact that LSU's defense is just not quite elite like they normally have been. Oh, Anna, I see Texas plays TCU. Not obviously a huge game for national title pictures, but if we always mention games you enjoy to watch. Texas TCU is almost always a fun game. Kind of splits the city of Dallas and Fort Worth in half a little bit. There's fans from everywhere around there. So that should be an enjoyable game. I would maybe go to it, but I'm not a big enough fan. But yeah. I think that's it, brother. Lane Kiffin's a 14-point favorite. They best not lose to freaking Old Dominion. So they already got too many losses on the year. I need Lane Kiffin to step up. And Mizzou plays Kentucky. They should win, but I doubt Barry Odom will. And as you mentioned, USC's Friday night for a standalone game, so that's kind of cool.
All right, well, let's this is still your segment because we got
right.
The crappy pick of the week where my co-host just blindly picks the worst game possible, and I make it happen. Last week we had a barn burner. A lot of these games turn out to be barn burners or just blowouts that are just ugly.
Well, last week, you know, we went down the old, good old NFL quarterback family tree, you know. I picked a game. I was unaware due to the great lineage of the quarterback who was holding the ball in the game. And good old Brett Gabbert, you know, if you're an NFL fan, you remember that man, Blaine Gabbert, who was a stud quarterback. Good old Brett Gabbert, 15-28 on the day, passed for 273, one touchdown, no picks. a quarterback rating of 80.3. Also ran the ball 7 times for 42 yards. The good old Miami Redhawks got it done. So Brett Gabbert leads the way. Blaine Gabbert was there. I believe we'd mentioned, you know, the Blaine Gabbert-Brett Gabbert connection, which led you to pick
yep.
the Redhawks. So another successful game. If you follow this, I think we're now 6-2 on the year with picking winners.
Yep,
handing out money,
6-2. And you know what's funny, dude? You go to ESPN, like, under the game, and it says Gabbert drops a dime. I was like, yes, nice. He's dropping dimes out there.
All right, now let me ask you, Chris. I have one last question to ask you for this pick. How many total wins do you think the two teams have? I'm about to give you for the pick today. Total wins of the two teams about to face off for the crappy pick of the week this week.
Total combined wins. I haven't even looked like I normally do, but the fact that you mentioned it makes me think it's really low. So I'm going to go with 3 wins combined. I'm going to go with 3 wins combined. Oh, no.
Too high. All right, brother. We got a couple of repeat offenders in this marvelous matchup, not on any cable channel because God knows no one wants to air this shit.
Not even
the UConn
Plus?
Huskies.
Not even
the UConn Huskies. Nope. Are traveling too. We've mentioned these boys before. They made the show last year. They made the show this year. The UMass Minutemen, who are 1-6, play the 1-6 UConn Huskies. Now, UConn is a 10-point favorite, but when you're 1-6 on the road, who the hell cares about 10 points? This game is at the Warren McGarrick Alumni Stadium. We've been here before, so if you've heard this name before, it's because, well, UMass has been in the crappy pick of the week. They were in week one. So, well, brother, these are some common teams. We've heard these names before. What does your gut tell you in this matchup of Marcus Camby? You know, he's always popping up on this show against the UConn Huskies. Break down this beautiful matchup. You can get into the game for $18. So maybe treat yourself to one of the worst games of the year. All right, the floor is yours.
So good old Warren McGarrick Alumni Stadium. And Vivid Seats tickets low as $18 to get in this UMass Huskies. Dude, in the 90s, this UMass UConn Huskies game in basketball would have been bomb, dude. And I'm going with Khalid Al-Amin from North Minneapolis with my UConn, a representative of college basketball. Obviously, Marcus Camby stands out for UMass, but you got to go. I mean, UConn has so many great players, but obviously I got to go with the hometown kid. But this is, like, we've had some crafty picks of the week. You know, it's been really bad before, but this one, this might take it, dude. You were right about this. I mean, you have two, like you said, they're a 10-point favorite on the road, UConn is, but they only average 16 points a game. And they give up 38. But then UMass has, you know, they almost average 21 points a game. So that's not the worst, but they're giving up 50. They're giving up an average of 50 points a game. I can't recall. Did I say that last? No, I don't think I've ever hit 50. I don't think we've ever hit 50 as far as giving up that much. And most of it's running. They give up 264 yards rushing on the ground. Oh, my God. This is a horrible matchup. And this is exactly why it's in this category. Both these teams are just hot garbage. Well, the capacity is 17,000. I thought they had a bigger stadium than that. Should I check the weather? I don't really think it matters. This is going to be ground and pound. This is bad. But I'm going to have to go with the UConn Huskies. I'm going Vegas just because I'm trying to win you guys money. 6-2, like he said, 6-2 out of 8 picks in this crappy pick of the week to close the we always close the podcast off with it. So I'm going to try to make you guys some more money, get us up to 7-2. I'm going UConn to take out UMass, but I really feel like something's going to go wrong in this game, and it's going to be an ugly game. But, yeah, I'm going to go UConn on this one, sir.
I'll give a shout-out to Rip Hamilton, one of the coolest names in basketball. The guy was a pretty good baller for the Huskies as well. So we will probably not mention that game next week besides the preview to this pick next week. I can't imagine there's going to be a worse matchup. But, yeah, when you have two combined wins and we're in week 9 of the season, holy God. So someone's got to win the game, so someone's going to go to 2-6, I guess. Anyways, we'll be back again next week. Hopefully not quite in a left field a couple moments. I think it was the weather in Texas that had us a little bit off today. But it was still a fun podcast nonetheless. We have some great Big Ten matchups. LSU, man, your next two games are freaking Auburn and Bama. If you happen to win both of those, my oh my, is that Coach O love going to be pretty high. And maybe the Badgers can knock off Ohio State. I don't see it happening, but nonetheless, you have a lot of great football to watch tomorrow. As usual, thank you for always listening to the podcast. We truly appreciate it. We love it. Have a safe weekend with your family. Enjoy the football. The boys are out. Have a good night. Peace.